good afternoon. I'm glad people got away from lunch to come to the session. My talk this afternoon is a bit of a long-winded title of Eucalyptus fasciculata productivity on converted farmland, implications for reforestation of marginal agricultural land in New Zealand. For those who know me, now I'm back in New Zealand working in Scion, which is a fancy-smancy trading name for the New Zealand Forest Research Institute. So I don't work for a car company, even though it's called Scion. First, I'll give a bit of a primer about New Zealand before discussing about climate change concerns in New Zealand. Also talk about the reforestation of marginal agricultural land and alternative species we're looking at in New Zealand and associated challenges before discussing the main study on Eucalyptus fasciculata, methods, results, conclusions, and future directions. But first, where the heck is New Zealand? New Zealand usually ends way in these global maps on the edge of the world, almost falling off to the into the universe. Usually it doesn't make it onto maps, so it's actually pretty impressive on this one here. But just in case anyone, people are confused, New Zealand's here, Australia's there, there's a big bit of blue between us, we're not part of Australia. New Zealand has a total land area of 27 million hectares. Of that, about 44% of that is arable agricultural land. About 23% is natural forest, almost none of that is logged. And New Zealand's forestry sector is based out of plantation forest, which is 1.8 million hectares. Of that, 90% is the Bicuvus radiata pine, 5% is Douglas fir, and the rest of it is a mixture of different species. Like the rest of the world, New Zealand's worried about climate change. Projections made by a sister research organization called NIWA has made projections of temperature increase in New Zealand between 1.6 and 2.0 degrees Celsius by 2080. More bigger concern for New Zealand is changes in rainfall patterns. We're talking about areas of net increase or decrease about 10-15% by 2080. New Zealand's rainfall primarily comes from the west here, so we can get more dry conditions on the eastern side of New Zealand, especially in these three areas, which is a major concern for the New Zealand government, especially for use of land use in rural areas. In New Zealand, there is about approximately 3 million hectares of agricultural land that can be classified as marginal agricultural land. Marginal agricultural land is land that the farmers that are barely breaking even on the land per hectare or even making a loss. These lands are usually in dry areas of New Zealand, usually hilly conditions like this, require fertilizer inputs to make them productive, and usually suffering from erosion issues, as you might be able to see on this slide here. There's initiatives by the New Zealand government to push to get farmers to a bit of a carrot approach to plant these marginal agricultural land into forestry areas for bioenergy, timber, carbon forests, and alike. And one of the major interests for the New Zealand government to do this is to help meet its Kyoto obligations for sequestration, and also to avoid situations like this, which happens a lot in New Zealand's farming hill country, a lot of erosion. New Zealand's plantation forest is not spread evenly throughout the country. The majority comes from the central North Island on the central plateau. These areas in orange represent the areas that are for marginal agricultural land. So there's up to 3 million hectares that could be planted, has a potential to be planted in forest, is away from the traditional forestry areas. So using traditional areas or plant index or site productivity, even for species with radiata pine, the information does not exist, or very little information exists. New Zealand's, in the terms of soil fertility in soils, has usually been defined by the soil CDN ratio. The lower the CDN ratio, the more productive the site is. But these have been a more nutrient poor forest soil, especially in the central North Island. Volcanic pumice soils are very low in these in nutrients. So it's unclear if this this relationship that's been used for 40 plus years in New Zealand would actually hold in these new areas that could be afforested. Turnip species has actually been a bit of a dirty word in New Zealand for the last 30 years, but there's been a bit of a shift of thinking, and we've started to look more towards other species for other markets, with this, Eucalyptus fastigata, redwood, Douglas fir, cypresses, and even a couple of indigenous species. Unfortunately, there's very little plot data available, especially in the areas that could be planted up in this areas of marginal agricultural land. There's no forestry site productivity for information in the agricultural land on top of that. And how do we describe these areas of relative fertility of when these areas get in converting farmland back into forest land, because these areas would be a lot higher fertility than traditional forestry areas. So on to the main study. This work was a larger study looking at Eucalyptus fastigata's potential for carbon sequestration and productivity throughout New Zealand. This study involved 53 plots throughout 15 sites throughout New Zealand, and the emphasis was for having plots in areas that have marginal agriculture land, Northland here, up on the East Coast, down in this area here, as well as up here in the South Island. New Zealand has a wide variety of soils, and the soils that we had in the 15 different sites included intersoils, lots and lots of septosoils, andosoils, of course, and the odd spodsoil floating around. So we definitely had a wide variety of interesting soils there. For the soils analysis, samples were taken from 0 to 5 centimetres. Three random samples were taken per plot and taken back to the lab for analysis. Due to the limited funding of this project, it was only able to do the basics. Looked at total carbon, nitrogen, pH, Bray-2 extractable phosphorus, Bray-2 extracted calcium, magnesium, potassium, and sodium hydroxide extractable phosphorus. So this little graph shows total soil carbon in terms of percentage. The x-axis is just a unique plot number of the values. As you can see, we don't have in these sites. I should mention that out of the 15 different sites, only one was a real forestry site. So all the other sites were recently converted farmland back into forests. And this graph kind of shows that it's not limited by soil carbon in these sites. So the average was around about 8% carbon. In terms of total nitrogen, there was a lot more scattered between 0.2 and 0.8%, an average around 0.6. When you put this in the terms of total carbon to nitrogen ratio, the range of CDN is a lot smaller, but it was interesting that the classic below the classic 25:1 line, we're seeing the classical boundary between nitrogen immobilization and mineralization. There was only one site above 25:1. Total Bray-2 extractable phosphorus, most values range between 20 to 100 milligrams of P per kilogram, but there was a few sites where the value was through the roof. Statistical analysis, site productivity was defined as mean top height of dominant trees in each plot at age 11. It is assumed that the faster the tree grows in terms of height, the more productive the site is, and that height growth is independent of how many trees you have per hectare or tree density. Total of 24 site characteristics were analyzed, including 13 soil characteristics as talked about in the previous slide. The method of analysis was multiple linear regression, where the optimal number of variables was selected by using R-squared, MALO-CP, Arcani information criteria, and Sauer-Bains criteria. And these three statistical tests kind of help make a cost of adding the next variable to the model. So it's instead of if you just look at pure R squared, you have to put all 24 site characteristics to make the best model. But each of those three tests have different ways of balancing the cost of adding another variable to the multiple regression model to explain the variability of site productivity. Before I jump into the results of the multiple linear regression, I quickly had a look at individual R-squared values for individual variables for predicting site productivity. And the R-squared that had the highest value was minimum mean annual temperature on a daily basis, and followed by mean annual temperature, then soil nitrogen latitude and soil carbon to nitrogen ratio. So total nitrogen and the CTN ratio appeared to have a reasonable reflection of site productivity at these sites. However, when we did the multiple linear regression, the selection method did not choose total soil N or the total CTN ratio. The most important first two values was temperature and rainfall, followed by a measure of soil water availability within the root zone for the plants to use. And the first soil fertility measure was actually the first extraction from Bray 2 phosphorus. And then followed by another, by the total phosphorus extracted by Bray 2, then followed by soil order, and then sodium hydroxide extractable phosphorus, and then this measure called LENS, which is Land Environments New Zealand, another sister organisation called Landcare Research uses to define what productivity is in for land throughout New Zealand, which kind of uses a similar statistical technique, but actually came pretty low on the ranking list. So in summary, temperature had the highest correlation with Eucalyptus fastigata productivity. Secondly, individually, soil nitrogen and CTN ratio correlated with site productivity. However, soil nitrogen and CTN ratio were not optimal in the multiple regression analysis, and it appears that the extractable phosphorus measurements was a better reflection of its impact onto site productivity for fastigata. And this study, showed that that using soil order was actually quite useful in helping explain the variability of productivity between sites. So it wasn't like all the high inputs into the agriculture land overrode the soil properties, which is a good thing. And so in conclusion, this study was a good example of the perils of using correlation analysis. If you just pick a couple of variables, you may get a reasonable explanation or a nice little R squared for your dependent variable. But if you actually miss out other site climate variables that have a bigger impact, the importance of those few variables you picked in the first place could be exaggerated. It's appeared that the CTN ratio would be a poor predictor of site productivity on marginal agricultural land, as this study used 14 of the 15 sites were ex-farm sites. So further work, hopefully, using this little talk to justify in my organisation that further research is needed to explain what the actual nutrient availability and nutrient cycling is to define what fertility in these marginal agricultural land sites. So to get a better idea of what can we grow on these different areas and what is our growth response is going to be. And quickly I have to acknowledge the New Zealand Ministry of Agriculture and Forestry SLEMAC Fund for funding funding this project, and Future Forest Research for and non-affiliated landowners for access to the sites and data sets. With that, thank you.
Questions, Pete? Got lots of time.
Another issue that there's one site in there that was not particularly productive for one reason, so I just blamed it on genetics. That's my excuse. But the genetic resource of what's been planted of fastigata in the last 30 years has been all over the place. I kind of got it down to about five different seed sources, and it's a lot more controlled. And what's been planted out there now is in the last couple of years, there's a lot. People know where the seeds have come from, what have you, but a lot of it's a bit of a crapshoot of what's out there, and it didn't seem to be too much anything obvious on genetic effects on growth areas, because bad families have been identified in the past and they're kind of died out anyway. So that's a concern, but nothing. There was nothing that was obvious of genetics with that. But basically, it was taking whatever was out there and making it work.
Before we take another question, is Siv Bachman in the audience? Okay.
So we keep running these regressions, and we never like the results we get. So what else should we do? Or what else should we try? Because the multiple regressions, we never like what we get. What do you suggest?
Well, funny that I have a solution. Well, kind of. When I went back to New Zealand, I got hired primarily because of doing process-based modeling. And as the previous question pointed out, is that you're relying on what's standing up there and what's scattered around and what have you. And I'm using is process-based modeling, using the existing sites, identified limitations and what have you, and using that to model how these sites are going to grow, especially in those large areas of New Zealand where there's no data points at all for this information. So it's kind of moving away from the multiple regression analysis, even though there's empirical data going in there and what have you, but at least you can say in a priori sense that you're not connecting the dots what exists out there. And in this study, I was surprised how good correlations I was getting out of multiple regression analysis from so few sites. Existing sites for Douglas fir and for redwood, there's very few data points and you just don't get any relationships. So that's hopefully moving this forward in the sense of using process-based modeling and applying, getting some more detailed soil relationships, what's going on in these ex-farm sites should help piece the puddle better than just crossing your fingers when you hit the enter key with SATs. Yes.
Was there a certain expectation or rationale for your inclusion of the sodium hydroxide extraction from the head leaf?
I used the Headley fractionation quite successfully for my PhD work in Hawaii, and I thought
successful at what?
Just getting measuring of extractable pea and relating that to plant available pea and how the trees were growing. But that worked on the assumption that there was low organic pea or low extractable pea for the sodium hydroxide pool, but there was actually quite high. I was being pulled out in these soils because they're pretty organic rich and there's a lot of phosphorus input from sheep poop. So. I only had a bit of extra money to try one other thing, and I thought, well, I take the thing I know that worked pretty well previously, and it got some good numbers out of it, but nothing I can use in this case for getting an idea of site fertility in terms of phosphorus.
And when you say it worked well before, and that's why you chose it.
Yeah.
And it was that the one that was best.
Yeah, that was the if I had the more money, I would have unlimited money, I would have done the Ty Headley because I would have got some good stuff out of that. And if I actually had a bit more money, I would have split the sodium hydroxide extraction pool into inorganic and organic. And I think the organic pea was swamping the inorganic pool that was coming out of there. So it was a bit unfortunate with that. So.
Questions for Dean?
Thank you.